Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Since this is a Wednesday afternoon, you are the only case we are hearing. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel, and I'm Leanne Dauphineau. Since you are the only case, I'm not going to say we're going to be totally flexible on your time, but you may get more questions than you would normally get if we had a very long docket. So I understand both sides are ready.
Yes, Your Honor.
To call the case, please.
The court will now call Jerry P. Lundgren versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Richard Alley will argue for the appellant. Ms. Tanya S. Dahoney will argue for the state.
Rick.
May it please the court. My name is Rick Alley. I represent the appellant in this case. I know the court is well aware of the record, so I will make a very brief statement of what the issues are and the facts around them, starting with the facts. My client was found guilty. Well, let me put it this way. He picked up a DWI case in Wise County, was represented by other counsel, entered a plea agreement where he was placed on probation. Approximately a week later, came down to Tarrant County and also picked up a DWI case. His trial counsel went back up into Wise County shortly thereafter and filed a notice of appeal, followed by a motion for new trial. In the meantime, the case rocked on, both this one and a previous case, the one with which the notice of appeal was filed. This court dismissed the appeal from the Wise County probation case on the basis of a lack of jurisdiction and because there was a waiver of appeal in the plea papers of the Wise County case. In the meantime, the case in Tarrant County proceeded with a motion to quash on the basis that the Wise County case was not a final conviction at the time that they were calling the Tarrant County case for trial. The motion to quash was heard, it was denied. Subsequently, a plea agreement was entered into, which permitted this appeal to be taken. And currently, Mr. Lundgren is on probation. In the event this court is of a mind to reverse this case, Mr. Lundgren's still not going to be avoiding prosecution because the only thing that's going to happen is that instead of being prosecuted for a felony, he will be prosecuted for a repeat misdemeanor. What we're dealing with as far as issues is a question of finality of judgment. The state takes one position, we take another. In the past, the concept of finality deals with whether or not an appeal or a motion for new trial was taken within the time allowed for such from a conviction, whether it be time or probation. If the motion for new trial was timely filed, or if a notice of appeal was timely filed, the conviction, the probation, whatever it was that the person was sentenced to did not become final until either the appeal was handled in some way by the Court of Appeals or the motion for new trial was denied, granted, or something happened on it, and then thereafter an appeal wasn't taken and no further action so that the case became in the concept of finality.
You keep using the word final.
Yes, ma'am.
The statute which deals with enhancement, punishment enhancement paragraphs, uses the term, as we all know it, final conviction.
That's correct.
The statute which deals with jurisdictional enhancement paragraphs, we assume intentionally does not use that phrase, but instead uses the phrase previously convicted. I'm assuming from your argument that you believe that previously convicted and finally convicted are the same things. Do you have any authority for that?
No, Your Honor, I do not. All I can point to is in the past, when a case would be, a notice of appeal would be filed, or a motion for new trial would be filed, whether you wanted to consider the person previously convicted or not, that conviction, previous or otherwise, did not become final until either the motion for new trial was disposed of in such a way that the conviction stood, or that the notice of appeal was in some way disposed of so that the conviction stood.
So but under rules of construction, we are to assume that the legislature or whoever uses a word final when they mean final and they don't use it when they don't mean it. And it's not in the statute that deals with jurisdictional enhancements.
Justice Gabriel, I understand your position. I disagree with your interpretation. I don't think the legislature knows the difference between previously convicted and finally convicted. I think that in the experience I've had in the last 30-something years, that they have said that something is mandatory, when, or at least used language that would be mandatory, and determined it to be permissive, such as the word shall, as opposed to may. So I don't see a distinction, or if there is a distinction, it's one without a difference between previously convicted and finally convicted, in my opinion. And again, I have no authority for this, because frankly, it hasn't ever come up before in this kind of context. In the past, it was firmly rooted in our jurisprudence that if you filed a notice of appeal, then the case was not final for any purpose until after that appeal was disposed. And that's where we're at as far as I could find. Now, I understand the state's arguing the position that you've espoused. And I don't think they've had any more help and or assistance in finding a case directly on point than I have. But we're still talking in this case about whether a conviction is final and therefore usable for enhancement when an appeal has been filed. I don't believe the law has changed on that at all and shouldn't in this case. If there's no other question.
Well, no. That, I mean, just because we're listening to you doesn't mean we don't have questions.
Oh, I didn't think that. I'm just saying if you don't have any, I was going to reserve the rest of my time. If you do, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay. So, if a prior can be used if it's on appeal for jurisdictional purposes, but cannot be used to enhance the punishment, that means you would try the person, if it made it a felony, in district court, but could only punish them for a misdemeanor? And only, could you convict them of a misdemeanor, of a felony, or only convict them of a misdemeanor? If for punishment, it has to be a final conviction, and for jurisdiction, it doesn't.
Judge, I disagree with an initial premise you made, and that is...
Well, that's the premise y'all were talking about. So
right.
I'm trying to go to the next logical step.
I don't think the legislature, if what Justice Gabriel has posited is, in fact, the result that's going to be in this case, you're going to have a problem that you've already identified, and that is every time, in this case, a DWI, with this fact situation comes up, you may be trying a guy for a felony and then ultimately only allowed to punish for a misdemeanor, which screws up basically the administration of justice. I mean, the judge will not know in the trial court exactly what he's going to do or she's going to do for punishment until well into the case. Now, looking at some of our law on motions to quash and in writing indictments or informations, everything that's required to be handled in the case must be set forth in such a way that all the parties, including the court, know what's going to be tried and what the available punishment is on conviction. So to take the position that's argued by the state as espoused by Justice Gabriel, we're not going to be able to do that.
Okay, let me make one thing perfectly clear here.
Yes, ma'am.
I have not developed a position yet. I am not espousing an opinion yet. I am asking questions, maybe in a devil's advocate manner, but I want it to be perfectly clear to you that I am not espousing any position or opinion at this point in time.
And I understand that, and I apologize to the court if you took affront. I didn't mean to. I'm simply saying that the state's argument is what you were asking me about. And I think you summarized the state's argument very well. So I'm trying to make sure that we understand that we're talking about the state's argument, not a court's position. So I'm sorry if you misunderstood. Did I answer your question, Justice?
You've convinced me there's no answer.
Well, I would submit to the court that the only reason there's no answer is because finality for enhancement and finality of judgment for jurisdiction are the same. And therefore, if it's not final for one, it's not final for either. And that would be the my final response to your question.
Anyone? But there's no case law.
No, Judge, there's not. Because we've never split hairs like this before. And I don't think the legislature intended to split hairs either. When you look at the overall circumstance, they didn't attempt to change anything about the way we were administering justice. They simply were trying to say that if a person gets a probation, in the past that would have been a non-final conviction and couldn't be used for enhancement. However, now they're saying if a person gets a probation or any kind of punishment, that can be used to enhance. And they stopped there. Of course, if the case is on appeal, then you're not going to be able to enhance until the appeal is disposed of. And if the case was not final because it had been appealed, then you're not going to be able to enhance with that for an offense that occurs between the time of the first offense and the second. That's what I'm trying to say.
Let me ask one other question.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm going to ask the same question, the flip side of this same question to
yes,
the state. I'm sure you're familiar, I know you're familiar, with the pending Lundgren 1 appeal that's
yes.
pending. Let's just say in a hypothetical, and like I said, I'm going to flip this and ask her the same question. We found in that first appeal that it was not error for the trial court to deny the motion to quash. In your reasoning in this case, how, if at all, does that affect this case?
Judge, I'm going to use a term used in the state's brief. I think we're dealing apples and oranges in this particular instance. Lundgren 1, in my mind, is the original appeal that was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction by this court. Lundgren 2 would be the actual appeal from the revocation. And I think the best way to say this, the motion to quash in Lundgren 2, the appeal, is completely different from the motion to quash in, I guess, what would now be Lundgren 3. Because we're dealing about different issues, although we are dealing with a motion to quash. That would be my response.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal then. Thank you.
Tanya?
May it please the court. I'm trying not to lose my voice. I have no idea why I'm losing my voice.
Do you need some water up there?
I have some. Thank you very much, Judge. I'm sure some jokes could be made about me losing my voice, but
I was thinking of a couple.
Yeah, me too. We suggest that the trial court's denial of the motion to quash was entirely proper, and I must admit, we have a new judge. You can tell that I filed the trial brief. There is an additional argument that's added to my brief that's different from my addition. It's a supplementation from my trial brief, but I think the trial court did the right job here, and I think there's certainly equities in this case, but there's also the law, and you were asking questions about finality in general, and the case law does not treat all finality the same. In fact, I've laid out in my brief different types of finality based on the purpose. I mean, one case I cited involves finality for an automatic suspension of a driver's license following a DWI arrest and refusal. Of course, there is the 1242 finality, which seems to be the part that Mr. Lundgren is wanting to propose here as applying, which that's black letter law that we've known for years on 1242 finality, that when an appeal is filed and the state has to prove the exact wording of 1242, that the prior convictions were sequential and final, we know that rule, that if a mandate has not issued from a court of appeals, it's not final. That's different, though. And then there's other finalities. I've also cited a case involving habeas finality and whether or not an appeal is over for purposes of whether or not habeas lies. There's many types. We're dealing with jurisdictional priors here, and we have a statute in 4909 that actually speaks to finality. And I think it's a curious animal if you consider how 4909 plays out with finality. You can have someone convicted of DWI and, as in this case, put on probation, knowing that there could be an appeal following a revocation of probation, and that is a completely different animal from 1242. We know that probation offenses are not considered final under 1242. So there's many, many differences. That's one of the major ones. But in this situation, there could be a subsequent appeal. And just to kind of follow up on the question, Justice Gabriel, that you were asking, thank you for a little bit of heads up. I appreciate that. The situation that you're talking about, if the Wise County Lungren case somehow comes back to this court, that's the same situation that we deal with in other instances, whether it's 1242 or 4904 sort of jurisdiction, when the earliest case that is alleged, whether it's alleged for jurisdictional or enhancement or punishment enhancement purposes, is collaterally attacked on a writ. It happens very rarely, but it does happen. And when that happens, then the parties act accordingly. Now, I agree with Mr. Alley that there are two different situations, and I look at the very first opinion from this court in the Wise County case, the dismissal, as the one that's applicable here. And of course, that actual opinion was admitted, I think, as State's Exhibit E. Anyway, can't remember the exact E, but that was admitted in evidence in this court for the trial judge to actually be aware of. In this situation, I think one of the most important cases, they're cited toward the end, and it's the newer argument added on, but Milburn, and then in addition to that, Jordan and Woolsey, if you read them all in concert, the bottom line is that Judge Catalano knew exactly what had happened already in the Wise County case when he allowed this case to go forward and the motion to quash. It was significantly after this court had already dismissed for want of jurisdiction. In fact, Tarrant County, indicted the end of June when this court had already dismissed in May, I think May 3rd, 2011. And the motion to quash was just heard this last year. So the judge was aware of the facts.
Was the judge aware of the motion for new trial?
Actually, yes. In fact, the motion new trial was Defense Exhibit 2. So, yes, absolutely aware that a motion for new trial had been filed in that case. Mr. Alley introduced it as an exhibit.
It had already been overruled by operation of law at the time that y'all indicted the case.
I think, it would have had to have been based on the timing. Since we indicted at the end of June, there's not a way for the... I'm never good at counting. I have to use my computer to look at the 75 days, but I'm thinking that we were well beyond that. And we had been talking to Wise County, which I believe that's shown in the record, that we're using their documents and looking at their documents and well aware of what had happened there.
And so aware that there was a notice of appeal then after the denial of the motion for new trial.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
That's pending at the same time this is.
Yes, but the reason that's different is because that... all of the cases. In fact, it's an interesting fact running through every single case cited in defense counsel's brief. I ticked off and double-checked this morning again. Every single case involves a situation without any waiver of appeal. Every single case cited by the defense is inapposite or disparate or however you want to distinguishable from our situation. From Ex Parte Webb down to Woolsey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cases cited. None of them involve the waiver of appeal. That's the situation that kind of changes all of the facts in this case. It's interesting, too, the Jones case, which we both cite. It's in my brief in footnote 7 and then later around page 20, I think. In that situation, and there was no waiver of appeal, but the defense attorney in that case argued that, gee, had there been a waiver of appeal, it was dealing with the window being, the state went forward on a And it was a DL suspension, not 4909 jurisdictional prior, so different in that situation. But the state had believed that the DL suspension was proper, and the defense argued that there was still a window of time to file a notice of appeal. And the defense attorney in that case actually argued kind of the opposite of here. They're like, well, gee, if there'd been a waiver of appeal, then of course the state would be correct, it would be final. But there wasn't a waiver of appeal. Well, here, there's a waiver of appeal. And there's not just a waiver of appeal. Only an appellate geek would call waivers of appeal beautiful. But there's beautiful waivers of appeal in this case, at least three times in the documents.
But the trial judge, in the judgment, said the judgment was final after the date of the new offense.
The trial judge entered the conviction, the judgment in this case, on the 7th of January of 2011, and this offense was committed on the 14th. And of course,
no. After the overruling of the motion for new trial, by operation of law, the judgment was entered and showed a different date, a date after the commission of the offense.
Pardon me. I must admit I question the trial court's reissuing of a judgment. Not that I'm commenting on cases, but there's a recent, that doesn't change the fact. What would happen in the situation is if that was a problem, that the judge reissued that judgment, then if that was a problem, then it would go to the original date of judgment. And there is a case I'm trying to think of where there was a resentencing case where it's just kind of like they're all the cows are out of the barn. You can't change that. And I don't even know.
Oh, no, that was the one where the jury had been dismissed.
Correct, Your Honor.
Had gone on, but 30 minutes later, the jury was recalled and put back in the jury room.
That's exactly the case I'm thinking of. But in this situation, at the time this offense happened, the state's entitled to rely on the finality of judgments. I mean, that's Park versus Raley, United States Supreme Court. And there were waivers, and there was a judgment. So there's not a problem. But that doesn't change the fact it was still in June when we indicted. I hate to question. It's not my case. I haven't seen the entire record. I hate to question the Wise County judge's reissuing of a judgment, but there is a judgment dated on the 7th of January of 2011. That is the one that we relied on. And we are
okay. Suppose, there is a plea, and the defendant signs all the waivers. And then the defendant says it wasn't a voluntary plea, even though appeal has been waived in a motion for new trial. The defendant proves up that he neither read, spoke, or understood English, and that the plea was not voluntary. Are you saying because he had signed the waiver of appeal, he couldn't raise a motion for new trial or prove that up in a motion for new trial? Because I think we've said that's when he has to do it.
Well, and I don't disagree with that scenario being a possibility. That did not occur here. In fact, the motion for new trial was boilerplate. That's one other aspect of this case. I'm glad that you reminded me of it that I wanted to point out. At no time has this defendant ever said that there was any involuntary nature of a plea. Now, of course, Your Honor, if he had raised that in the motion for new trial, I put in one of my footnotes the Threadgill case out of Houston, and there is, if that had been raised in a motion for new trial and the waivers of appeal in the same situation we have, there's no right to appeal on that issue. And that's what Threadgill says. I think it's the first court in Houston. But he could have raised it then. And it's kind of one of those, maybe that's an act of grace had the trial court granted that, but a denial is not appealable where there's been the waivers of appeal. But the bottom line, that's a whole different fact scenario than what we're dealing with. This defendant never has questioned the voluntariness. In fact, when this court on the Wise County Lundgren case in the dismissal opinion, noted in the dismissal opinion, this court asked counsel in March, after the notice of appeal had been filed in January, to submit some sort of correspondence, letter, case law, facts, something to show why the appeal could go forward, which might have been a good time to suggest, oh, it was involuntary. Counsel didn't even respond, defense counsel. And then this court pointed that out in the May opinion dismissing the case for want of jurisdiction. At no time has anyone, including in the defense brief right now, doesn't use the words involuntary ever. There's no suggestion
really
that
that
was the reason.
The point was a waiver of appeal doesn't necessarily waive a motion for new trial if the grounds are there.
You
since
know,
we've said that you have to raise certain things in a motion for new trial, even when it's a plea.
I agree, and that's one of the part. This is a unique case, no doubt about it. One of the things that, in reading defense counsel's brief, I see it as a concession in the brief where it says, sure, a motion for new trial is part of an appellate right, but it's not, calls it not like a, he doesn't say real appeal, he just says it's not an appeal. It is a questioning of the trial court judgment, though. That's what an appeal is. And, gee, what rules have applied to a motion for new trial? The appellate rules. You go to a seminar on appeals, you talk about motions for new trial. It is part of appellate practice. Not that that's any sort of binding authority, I recognize. But a motion for new trial is a reconsideration in the same way that you do when you look at cases. It's an appellate right. This defendant said he waived any and all appellate rights. It was an unlimited, absolutely wide open waiver of everything.
Not really saying that a defendant can waive his right to file a motion for new trial, are you?
Saying that it appears, yes, actually, I also found cases where there were written waivers of motion for new trial as well. That's not the scenario here. It's generic, we waive any and all rights to appeal.
Just to make sure I understand your question on the flip side of what I asked him, if this court were to hypothetically say in the Wise County case, no, you couldn't go on and use the offense 7 days later to revoke his probation, do you think that that ruling would have any effect on our consideration of this appeal?
I see revocation in a different light. It would still be, I think it would still fall under 4909, which means that it wasn't revoked, which means a probation eligible or a probation granted defendant is a final case under the express wording of the statute. So I don't think it impacts this case.
Any questions? Do you have any other questions? Okay, thanks, Tanya.
The state respectfully requests that the appellate issue be denied. Thank you.
Is there anything else you wanted to say?
I'm sure there is. I'll think of it in about 10 minutes. Thank
oh,
you,
yeah.
Judge. So.
As you're walking out the door. Okay, Rick.
And please, the court, counsel. I'd like to address the two issues that both of you brought up. There is a problem with the wording of the judgment. I don't know why the Wise County judge did that. It certainly is something when we're talking about either enhancement or jurisdiction for appeal, it's something that has to be addressed. The waiver of appeal issue in this case says waiver of appeal. It does not say waiver of motion for new trial and appeal, as is currently the practice in a number of other courts. Be that as it may, he did not waive his right to file a motion for new trial. The motion for new trial, if you look at the timeline, plea, new case, motion for new trial within the 30 days, means that the original plea is now under judicial review by the trial court and therefore not final for any purpose. That's not an appeal. Appeals come to this court. Motions for new trial are at the trial court level. Obviously, they affect appellate timetables and procedures, but they are different and distinct. The powers of the various courts are different and distinct, whether you're dealing with a motion for new trial as a trial judge, or you're dealing with a motion for new trial as an appellate judge. Just the same as the trial court cannot in any way interfere with this court's exercise of its appellate jurisdiction. They are separate and distinct, even if they may be part of the same procedure. What we're not dealing with here, we're not dealing with procedure, we're dealing with finality for both enhancement and for appeal purposes. When is a case over? Now, in the event there had been no motion for new trial or no appeal notice, obviously there would not have been an issue raised in what is now, I call, Lundgren 2. And there would be no question that the trial judge in Wise County could revoke based on the Tarrant County offense. Now, I think it's important to say the Wise County judge could revoke for the Tarrant County offense, whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor, makes no difference. It's an offense to drive while intoxicated. The question becomes on finality when we're dealing with that here is enhancement in the Tarrant County case, not the Wise County case. The Wise County case simply becomes a fact to consider when looking at finality of the Tarrant County felony charge. Because there was no specific waiver of the right to motion for new trial, and because it was timely filed, then it rendered the Wise County charge used to elevate the Tarrant County case to a felony non-final for all purposes, is the appellant's view. The filing of the appeal is simply another reason why it's not final. Ultimately, this case was not indicted until after both the motion for new trial had become overruled by operation of law, and the appeal from that original plea had been dismissed. But the problem is that in order to have it previously final, the indictment would have had to have come down before the a motion for new trial or appeal were filed, and even if it was, if they were timely filed in the interim, they still wouldn't be final for purposes of the Tarrant County felony court jurisdiction as alleged in the Tarrant County indictment. A case does not become final on the day that it's handed down. That's the rule both in civil and criminal cases. In civil cases, the trial judge retains jurisdiction, plenary power, whether a motion's filed or not, for 30 days. And during that 30-day period, that charge or whatever it is non-final. It's one of the reasons why divorce clients are told not to get remarried until 31 days later, because if they do get married in the 30 days and if that judgment is set aside, now they've committed bigamy. When we're talking about driver's license suspension, we're talking about a civil case. Different rules, different procedures, different circumstances, and therefore distinguishable from what you have before you, which is a criminal law case, one charge being elevated to another because of a prior final conviction. Now, that's the nutshell. Tanya and I argued this in the trial court. The trial court was aware of the fact that there was no waiver of motion for new trial. He was aware that a motion for new trial had been timely filed, and that all of that was before him. What he essentially, I believe, did, although I have no findings of fact to prove it, is that he considered the motion for new trial to be part of the appeal, and since the appeal, there was a waiver, he lumped them together, I believe, erroneously. Now, for that reason, and all the other reasons that are set forth, and I'd like to point out we're not conceding anything, we'd ask this court to reverse the judgment of the trial court, remand it to the trial court for further proceedings consistent with this court's opinion. And if there's no other questions.
Questions? Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Rick and Tanya, we appreciate you coming in to argue. As you can tell, we certainly have questions. Your case is submitted, and you're free to go about your business, and this court will be adjourned.
Thank you.